You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
We are recorded live without a net, without remorse, without regret. I'm your host, RJD, and this is a shot of madness. Joining me today is the boss, the man that runs the midside. Welcome to the midside. My tag team partner for this episode, Justin M. Lesniewski.
Just go with Gronkowski. It's fine. We'll just pretend my last name is Gronkowski for now. If you can't,
Justin M. Gronkowski.
That's right. But that's, I think this means, you know, I have to break my back all of a sudden.
I just get it going, and I see that WSKI, and I think about Monica, and it's every single time.
One time in high school when Bill was still president, they called our house asking for Miss Lewinsky. It took, because they were looking for my mom, and it took everything in me not to tell them to call the Oval Office. I just hung up on them, but I really wanted to say, try the Oval Office.
Oh, it's just a wonderful thing. You know, she does lots of charity work.
Yeah, and she, you know, she worked independently to be an entrepreneur. So I was saying to you pre-show, my, how the times have changed that we revere her more than Bill at this point.
A lot of anti-bullying stuff that she's done. And you know what? You get knocked down only to get back up again. I wrote that.
Oh, so you're Chumbawamba.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, look, if it's all right with you, I'd like to go over, instead of my top 10 best and my top 10 worst, my favorite 10 television shows of this season and my top 10 most disappointing TV shows of this.
Hey, it's your show, whatever you want to do. If you want to do like the top 10 shows for you to poop on, that's fine by me too. I am interested to hear what you have to say. Maybe you can convince me to watch some shows or convince me to put them on my year-end list. So I'm ready, RJD.
You know, when I do this, it is 99% for my own enjoyment. And I just don't think talking for 30 minutes about, what's the name of the one with the Glee, the blonde-headed lady from Glee? She was like Angel from Hell.
Uh-huh. Wasn't that canceled?
Yeah, like after the second episode. That's not going to be fun to talk about those type shows for 30 minutes. So I want to talk about shows that were successful, that had a full season, or some of them had a full season, but they were disappointing. They were disappointing for reasons. And I like to run through the first five all in one big chunk.
So we're going to start with disappointing.
We're going to do disappointing first because I want to end on a high note.
Yeah, there you go. You don't want to leave us disappointed. Some of these,
I actually recommend watching some of these disappointing ones just to see how bad they were. But look, Exorcist, Damien, Rush Hour, MacGyver, Lethal Weapon. You know, out of those five, I thought one of them would have a nugget, and there's no nugget there. They're all recycled TV shows from movies, except MacGyver. And I was calling it MacGruber, and I wrote MacGruber down on my notes. That, I mean, these things are done. I mean, they're dunner than a microwave dinner, and there's nothing there. And it's just, I guess it's disappointing. Disappointed in any of these? Did you give them a try?
The only one I saw anything of was MacGyver, and it was pretty much what I expected. What I saw of MacGyver was I was in the gym. For some reason, they like putting CBS on in the gym. The demographic of our gym is not like 50-year-olds and older. I don't know why they put on CBS, but they put on CBS.
It's safe.
I guess that makes sense. Except on the days they put on The Flash. And I'm like, are you trying to spoil all my shows? On Tuesday it'll be The Flash, and on Wednesday it'll be Survivor. It's ridiculous. But so I go in there, and they have MacGyver on. And the first thing is, he's like trying to like disarm a bomb in the middle of the city. I thought part of the point of MacGyver was he's supposed to be on his own somewhere without a team to help him. Like, is it a big deal to try and jury-rig disarming a bomb if you have, like, the disposal of the police force at, you know, if you have the police force at your disposal? That doesn't make any sense. And then the episode ended with some sort of existential monologue. That's not what MacGyver is about.
So it's the voiceover.
Right, exactly. Which, you know, it has its uses, right? I mean, it was very good in a show like Dead Like Me, which was a very existential show. It works a bit in a show like The Flash, which, you know, Barry Allen is very reflective on who he is. But on a show like MacGyver, you don't want that. You just want this smart guy who figures out how to do shit when no one else is around. So that's the question I was going to ask you is, they're just trading on the names of these shows, right? Do they actually resemble anything
like the original
property?
Absolutely not. They don't. Lethal Weapon is unrecognizable. And what you have when you try to reboot these things is they go so far away from the original recipe, and then you can't replicate what made the original great, because Lethal Weapon is the batshit crazy Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, and they're both on their A game for at least two of the nine Lethal Weapon films. The first two, they are fantastic.
Nine. I didn't know there were fucking nine.
I lost count after five. But MacGyver, I mean, we laughed at Richard Dean Anderson, but we tuned in to see him stop a nuclear weapon with a paperclip. And, you know, he had a funny hairdo, but he was a star, you know. And that's why he went on to have great success with Stargate. Dude was a star. And that's like trying to replicate a recipe without a main ingredient. And, I mean, these were disappointing. And most of them I only gave one or two episodes for because there were no redeeming values to these things.
Wow, that is a pretty harsh criticism. I think a lot of it is born from the era these shows came from. If you look at Lethal Weapon, MacGyver, those are both of the 80s where it was more about who was in it. I mean, even Rush Hour was sort of a 90s version of an 80s action movie, where that movie was very... Both of those movies, or there are three? I don't even know. I lost count of that.
There are three Rush Hour movies. But look, and they're not my favorite films, but Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker...
Make the movie.
...are funny.
Yeah,
they're
good.
Entertaining. And sometimes, as you'll see in some of these... I mean, I like the existential drama. I like the shows that sometimes make you wring your hands. And then sometimes I just want to sit down and watch Barry Allen run really fast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just want to be entertained.
But not quite as fast as anyone else.
And there's always somebody faster than Barry, but he's
the fastest man in the world. Parentheses, not really.
Except for the new guy that's here, and he's a little bit faster. But that show may be the greatest super comic person show just for the memes alone. You know?
Yeah.
But look, the next one is disappointing. It's really tough to put it in the disappointing list because I really liked it. I loved season one, and I felt season two was a sophomore slump. Was Mr. Robot?
Now, see, I'm interested in what you have to say about this show because in the mid side, we've been very critical of it. Elliot watched it. Elliot is one of my co-hosts on Welcome to the Mid Side, and he hated it.
Elliot.
And I was
season two or season one?
Season one. And the reason he disliked it is this seemed like a lot of social justice-y, bring the man down and use hacking to expose the system that isn't really corrupt, which these people think is corrupt.
I think it asks more questions than that.
Okay.
And I think that that's why I was just so disappointed in season two, is there wasn't as much payoff in season two that I was expecting, you know.
So what kind of a payoff were you expecting, and what did they deliver?
I was kind of expecting the villains not to be as villainous, and I was expecting they pulled the, you know, how much of this do you talk about? How many spoilers do you do? They pulled the big switch at the end of the first season is that Christian Slater's character is not really there. You know, it's all in the protagonist's head.
So they fight clubbed Christian Slater.
They fight clubbed, and he's the, you know, they reveal that he's the
Brad Pitt.
He's the father, Brad Pitt character, but it's all in his head. This guy's crazy. He forgets that his sister's his sister. He tries to kiss his sister. They made a big deal about that.
So he goes Fight Club and Star Wars in the same finale.
It pretty much is, you know, and they did the same thing about five episodes in.
Ah, I hate when that happens, when they run out of ideas.
Season. Well, they're you know, he's living this life, but then after five episodes, he's really not. It's something else. So you've been drawn in to his psychosis again. And I thought the first year was really good. I was really sharp, and it felt like they went to that well again. You got a good enough setup. Show us more of this cabal. Show us more of these giant corporations that are evil, which is a caricature. I mean, they call it Evil Corp. Jeez. So there's got to be some sort of payoff there, unless it's just, you know what I'm saying? It can't be all set up. We might have that problem with some of my favorites as well, but it's the concept of you can't start your journey unless you know the ending. And it feels like through this second season, they didn't know where they were going.
Yeah.
Started great. Didn't know where they were going.
Yeah.
And number four, most disappointing was the return of the X-Files. They didn't know what they were doing. And I don't know, were you an X-Files guy? Did you like the X-Files?
I liked some of it. I didn't like all of it. I always liked the more alien sci-fi plots where, like, at the end of the episode, you were like, did that really happen or not? I didn't really like the more government conspiracy plots. But the thing with the X-Files is it's sort of born of an era before there was the, you know, the overarching serialized narratives. So the show never really had a payoff, and the movies never had a payoff. And if you're going to bring it back, doesn't it have to just do exactly what you said? Doesn't it have to be building towards a very specific payoff?
Well, that was what we were just complaining about with Mr. Robot. You don't have to give me the total payoff, but you have to give me some payoff. You have to reward your people for watching. And I liked the return of the X-Files, and I liked probably half the episodes, but that's got to be a disappointing for a juggernaut to return like that and just not deliver the goods.
So you don't have to go into any spoilers, but how did it end? Was it a whole serialized plot, or was it like super
open-ended? No, they
did.
Hey, look, you could watch the first episode of The Return, and you could have watched the last episode, and you've gotten all your alien conspiracy stuff. And the last episode is pretty good. There's going to be a virus that kills off humanity, but the way to fight the virus is through the alien human DNA hybrid. And so Duchovny's character is going to die because they've got to have his son's DNA to fix him, but they've got the antidote. So who knows how they're going to get the antidote to millions of people. Very dark ending, but then there's a UFO that shows up at the end, and hopefully his son's on there so that we can administer the antidote. But if you've watched the X-Files, that's kind of the way it is. It's like, there's no hope. There's no way out of it. Oh, wait a minute. Everything goes black. And then everybody wakes up and they're fine. And that's happened probably a dozen times in its run. So I was kind of expecting that kind of ending. But it was a good payoff. You know, you get to see the cigarette smoking man again. They tell you the whole story. You know, it was never about an alien invasion. It was about the corrupt people that had been in contact with the aliens taking over the world. And, you know, more of an Illuminati type thing where they were going to depopulate the world.
So you were disappointed you had to watch the episodes in the middle. You would have rather them just released episode one and episode whatever the last one was.
There were two or three episodes in the middle that were the worst episodes of X-Files that I've ever seen. Well, it's tough because, you know, it's funny watching them, though, because you can tell the co-stars hate each other.
Oh, let it die then.
Well, you know, the quest for more money.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the truth is out there. The money is out there.
Yeah, we're going to hit Marvel pretty hard here with a 1-2 punch, and I know you're going to love it. But
well, that works with Luke Cage, the 1-2 punch, right?
I've been looking forward to Luke Cage since they announced these things. And the first episode was all right. I really enjoyed it by about the third episode. And it was almost my most disappointing show of the year. They just kind of lost their way in the middle of it. There's an episode where they really create interest in the villain. And I'm sitting here watching the episode, and through flashbacks, you see this character's childhood trauma. And you see him, because of an overbearing aunt, murder his uncle. And after he murders his uncle, he says, "He was always there for me. He always had my back. And you just made me shoot him." And you, all the things he's done, whether how horrible they've been up until that point, they're not justified. I'm not saying you're rooting for this guy. I'm saying you understand this guy. And he's not a paper cutout villain. And two scenes later, they kill him. Now, wow. In the previews, he's standing up to Luke Cage going, "You don't want a war, boy." So the whole thing is, you're sitting here, you're going to see these two strong characters. The man who is a villain, but through flashbacks and his trauma, you see he never wanted to be a villain, but he's a villain. Versus Luke Cage, the man who doesn't want to be a hero. And that clash happens, and it never happens.
Yeah, and it's just really bad plotting.
It's bad, and I don't know why they did that. Maybe there was a time constraint, because he's also on House of Cards and a couple other shows, and maybe he was only available for 5 episodes, but the show never recovered. And then they used the worst plot point of Luke Cage is bulletproof, and then there's a magic bullet that shoots him.
Wow, they went immediately to kryptonite in season 1?
They immediately went to kryptonite, and I've always said this. It's weak writing. If you take Superman and then you have to take his powers away so you can write conflict, you are a weak writer. That's why I hate the Spider-Man films where he has to lose his power. That's weak writing. A great writer takes those characteristics and powers and writes around them. So, and it didn't happen for one episode, Justin. For 4 episodes, you had Luke Cage walking around holding his side. I think he actually got shot in the shoulder and the side. And he's, "Oh, man, I've been shot. Oh." You know, I love Michael Coulter. He's great, Luke Cage. Rosario Dawson's fantastic. I really like the guy who played Cottonmouth till they killed him off. You know, the man who owned the barber shop was really cool for 2 episodes. His name was Pops, and they killed him off.
Man, Marvel just making all the wrong choices. You told me about this show, and I was excited about it. And you got me excited about this and Iron Fist. And then I saw the initial reviews of this, and I was like, I'm not even going to waste my time. And then the way you're describing to me this right now, the backstory for the villain, isn't that the same exact backstory as the Kingpin in season 1 of Daredevil, where his mom forced him to kill his dad?
It's not exactly like that. It's more gangster, but it was good. I mean, it was really done well. And you were, during that episode, I was thinking this guy could rival the Kingpin as a villain. I mean, we're seeing a good, you know, antagonist for Luke Cage here. You know, he's smart. He's ruthless. He doesn't see himself as a villain. He sees himself as doing what it takes to survive. And then his cousin and pushes him out a window and he dies. And what's worse about that is another guy shows up at the end of that episode and shoots Luke Cage with the magic bullet, and he's calling Luke Cage brother. And I think that's just slang for the folks in Harlem. But a couple episodes later, it revealed that he's actually Luke Cage's brother. He's his half brother. And it just kind of spiraled out of control. I mean,
yeah, it sounds like they did 2 season arcs in 1 season. So season 1 should have been Cottonmouth, and season 2 should have been Luke Cage's brother. Maybe at the end of season 1, after you've established him as this really strong, invulnerable person, you have him get shot, and that's the cliffhanger. How the fuck could he could have gotten shot? And then you cut to black, and then you're left wondering.
Here's the couple problems, I think. I think script writing was a problem, because the casting is fantastic.
Oh, Marvel is... You can't knock Marvel on is casting.
Yeah, their casting is fantastic. But the script is... first couple episodes are really strong. The last episode is really strong. But man, in the middle is terrible. And I had the same problem with Jessica Jones. It started really good, really dark subject matter. And then they just kind of lose their way. And then they try to scramble at the end and finish strong. But by then, it's too much. It's like there's a sweet spot in there. And I'm going to hit this on some of my favorite shows of the year. But there's a sweet spot in there between 6, 8, 10 episodes. And I feel like some of these Marvel episodes really, they really should have been 10 or 8 episodes. I think if they'd have condensed Luke Cage's story down to 8 episodes and you would have had Cottonmouth's death the second to the last episode or the third to the last episode, right instead of the middle of the series, it might have worked, but it felt like him and Jessica Jones were about 3 episodes too long. And that's sad because it's fantastic. He's a good Luke Cage. Rosario Dawson, like I said, the cast is fantastic. I think they just needed a little bit better material.
Yeah, a lot of times with this writing for these longer seasons, they don't know how to set up waypoints and checkpoints for the characters to hit on their journey that aren't purely some sort of dramatic death or violence or some sort of upheaval. They can't show them like having some sort of realization or something like that. It has to be these big, loud events.
Well, it was too similar to Jessica Jones, as they really don't want to be heroes.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a friend of his, like on maybe episode 4, they're like, you should go help those people and let them pay you. You could make a good living that way. And I'm thinking, yes, because that's the comics. That's like a 10-year arc in the comics where him and Danny Rand just work for money.
Yeah, I wanted like to see that.
Like the A-Team, you know. Yeah. And another thing I was disappointed in is now they've said, well, we're going to have Luke Cage season 2. Well, no. I want to see Heroes for Hire. I want to see the dynamic of the billionaire aristocrat and the hard-fighting superhero from Harlem, you know, the yin and the yang, and having another solo thing. I mean, other than his relationship with Jessica Jones and some comics from the most recent future, there's not a whole lot there for Luke Cage. He was in Heroes for Hire for 40 years. Enough complaining about poor Luke Cage. They move on to a worse Marvel TV show, and that is probably the most disappointing, is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I described Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a bad marriage from about the first season. And I really love the Coulson character, and I think that guy, with his limited ability and his limited charisma, has really done a fantastic job with that character and with this show, but there's just not enough there for this show. And this show has fumbled the Inhumans. They fumbled the Grant Ward story where he became an Inhuman god, Hive. They did this big push with Ghost Rider, and then they have the big Ghost Rider episode, and it's the lowest episode. It's the lowest ratings this show has ever got. I mean, it's time to pull the plug on it.
I don't know about the ratings and all of that, but I'm glad you brought up the Grant Ward thing, because that to me is what killed watching the show for me. I didn't watch the Hive plot or anything, but to me, Brett Dalton was the standout actor on that show, and Grant Ward was the standout character. And when they had him be Hydra in season 1, and then, you know, the Hydra thing ended, it was sort of like, was he going to be good or bad? And they were playing him ambiguously. And then they just turned him into a villain. And then what I read for this most recent season is they, as you just said, they turned him into Hive, and then they killed him off. Why would you? That's just really bad.
Well,
production to kill your best guy off.
Out of nowhere, he kills Coulson's lover. And so Coulson's like, I've got to kill you. And so he goes to this other world, and they're on this other world, and he kills Grant Ward. And Grant Ward's body gets inhabited with a Hive, and then he comes back to our world. But once they made him,
they kill off Ward twice, basically.
They kill off Ward twice, and they had to kill him off once he was Hive, because he was so evil, he was going to take over the world. But also because they couldn't afford to keep having this supervillain with all these – I mean, he looked like Cthulhu in the face when he showed his real form.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with Grant Ward. He was such a great bad guy when he turned evil – and the Whedon's brother, you know, is the guy who wrote Buffy. We're talking a vampire that has killed thousands of people and he redeemed him. We're talking a vampire that tried to rape Buffy and four episodes later you're cheering for him. So don't tell me that because he tortured Bobby. Look, he tortured Bobby. You have to listen to your fans. 60% of the fans wanted Bobby tortured.
Wow.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That was their best asset, and they blew it. And that's disappointing to kill off your best asset like that. The best character, the best actor. Now they're left with Ming-Na Wen.
And that's great, but there's not enough there to keep that thing going. And they put a bunch of eggs in the Ghost Rider basket, and Mexican car riding Ghost Driver doesn't sell.
Well, especially because, when we all just elected Trump for president. So, not reading your audience, Marvel,
what is that?
ABC.
What is that even have? What does Ghost Rider and Mexicans and cars have to do with Trump? I don't know.
I was saying the Mexican thing. I was making a joke of the fact that Trump's platform was anti-Mexican.
Trump loves Mexicans, I heard.
Trump loves anyone who loves him.
Trump doesn't love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because he can't make any money off Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And he can't make any money off of SNL either, right? With the way they've been roasting him with Alec Baldwin.
You know what? I would love a good Trump roast. The problem I have with SNL is it's not funny. It's not funny, yeah, Justin.
I agree.
You're too young to remember the golden years of SNL. I remember waiting up at night as a small child to see this guy called Eddie Murphy. And he was the funniest thing we'd ever seen. And as a small child, you can't stay up to midnight to watch SNL very often. But when we did, we'd see it and it would be something that you would talk about for years. It was just fucking golden. And I remember during the Reagan years watching Dennis Miller just pound Reagan. I mean, he would just pound Reagan. People forget that Dennis Miller was way, way left back in the day. And even when Dana Carvey and that whole bunch of young guys, the Man Whore and Farley and Sadler, mm-hmm, and Norm MacDonald. And they weren't classic, but they were good. And then Lorne Michaels came in there and fired them all at the same time. Now, if you know the story behind that, he just fired every single one of them. And they all went on to make millions in terrible films that they made. But that's a different story. But it didn't matter who was the president. They would take shots at him. And it was funny. The Trump stuff's not funny. It's not jokes. It's got a political agenda in front of it. And I just want to laugh. I want to laugh at them making fun of Trump. I mean, his kids. Why don't they have actors dressed up as his kids?
I don't know.
They say that, you know, the funniest joke is his kids look like people that would do the purge.
That's pretty good.
I mean, his sons, I mean, and you know, love them, hate them. They do kind of look like people that would do the purge. But, you know, SNL was the most disappointing this year because I think it's dead. And I think what killed it was the terrible tribute to Leonard Cohen that they did, which the girl did in character as Hillary.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I didn't understand that when I saw that.
Well, doesn't Leonard Cohen deserve better than that?
Well, yeah, in today's day and age, everyone is just trying to co-opt whatever they can for their own agenda. But you're right, to respect an artist and to respect any human being, you shouldn't make them and make their life or their death part of your own agenda.
And I felt like that's what they – I mean, if she weren't dressed up like Hillary, I could almost tolerate it. But it was number one, it was a bad rendition. I won't throw rocks at any artist. It was a bad rendition. It was in bad taste. But then her to, like, channel Hillary, I'm not giving up, and that's okay. How's the recount in Wisconsin going for you, Hillary?
Yeah, you're spot on about SNL, but I want to hear about some of the stuff that you love. So run me through some stuff you loved this year.
Real quick, like honorable mention, because I tried to keep it to 10, but it really wasn't. Honorable mention, The Americans is a fantastic show. House of Cards, Kevin Spacey is doing God's work on that show. And a show that started out like that was started out really bad for me but got better was the Chronicles of Shannara. Shannara should have been Lord of the Rings plus Game of Thrones. It really kind of was more like Lord of the Rings plus Twilight, but it really got better toward the end of the, and again, it's not long. It's only 10 episodes. It's beautiful. There's some pop music in it from MTV, but it's worth checking out if you like fantasy.
Yeah, they kind of made that like Twilight because, as you just said, it's on MTV, correct?
Yeah, and it's not – the story's not Twilight at all. The story is the Terry Brooks wrote that, and that story is almost like the grandfather of Game of Thrones. You know, Terry Brooks was killing off main characters when George R. Martin was writing science fiction stories and not getting paid anything for them. So it was – I almost put it on my disappointing list because I had such high expectations because the books are epic fantasy at its finest. And it started off kind of like a adult, you know, Hunger Games, you know, Twilight kind of thing. But it got better as the show went on. And hopefully in season two it goes – deeper into what the books was, not what people tuned into MTV expect. It's a weird marriage. Why is MTV spending $100 million on a series about elves? It's not a good fit. But if you like fantasy, it's worth plodding through the first couple episodes to kind of get to where it gets a little bit better. But it's not good enough to be in my top 10. My top 10, I'm so proud of this top 10. These are great shows. And number 10 is second season of Better Call Saul. And if it was as good as season one, it might have been closer to the top. Are you keeping up with Saul, Justin?
I have not. I did not personally like it because it was too much like Breaking Bad, and I was like, I don't want to just watch this all over again. So tell me how it's differentiated itself from Breaking Bad.
It's completely differentiated itself from Breaking Bad in season two because they had the guts to make this character. First of all, he's not Saul Goodman yet. Walter White is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who eventually turns into Saul, Jimmy, is a great guy. And that's the biggest difference between this show and Breaking Bad.
Right, because Walter White was always a detestable person.
He's a detestable person and detestable character, and we couldn't quit watching him. Because Cranston's performance was incredible. Better Call Saul is the complete opposite of the series.
Interesting.
Jimmy is a great person. And they don't push it on you. You just kind of have to figure it out yourself. But he has more heart and more character than 100 Walter Whites. And the problem I had with the way Breaking Bad ended is at the end of the day, I didn't care if any of them lived or died. I didn't care if any of them lived or died. I would have been sad if I'd seen his son die, but I wouldn't have said, well, that was terrible, because if it had happened, you would have said, well, considering everything that's happened, you know, your son might get killed if you're a giant drug dealer. So, I mean, that was the problem. You know, Jesse was a rat. I didn't care if Jesse lived or died.
Yeah.
You know, Walter had become the worst version of himself. So I didn't care if he lived or died. I didn't really want him to die from cancer, but, you know, I kind of didn't want him to get arrested either. So it was kind of like, how's it going to end? After about the third episode of Better Call Saul, and especially in the second season, you really start pulling for Jimmy. I mean, you really do. And another great show is, and AMC just continues to put out quality show after quality show after quality show. It's not the era of Mad Men, but they are so strong. I mean, there's a lot of AMC stuff on here, and there's a lot of Netflix stuff on here. And Narcos season two just killed it. That's another show that is fantastic.
And I have not seen it, so why do you like it?
Pablo Escobar's story is amazing. Character that plays him is amazing. The character that plays the Red Viper is like the second fiddle here. But it's good, man. It's very interesting. It's very well done. The Netflix shows, the budgets are incredible. I mean, they're really well done. And they're like little miniseries. You know, yeah. I grew up in the era of miniseries. So you'd watch, you know, 2 hours of a miniseries for two or three nights in a row. That would let them explain the story. It would relax. It would you could breathe, you know, mm-hmm. and you could get to know the characters and their motivations. So when there was an arc, it would mean something more than, you know, like you just said, a violent act or something like that. But I mean, I highly recommend Narcos. It's not feel good television. There's a show on Independent Film Network that's it's going to finish up in season four, and it's Rectify. Rectify is a tough show to watch, but it's just great television. It's a story of a kid who, when he was 15, went to jail for raping and murdering a girl, and he was falsely accused. It's DNA evidence 20 years later gets him out, and it's the fallout of dealing with all that and the fallout of finding out who really did it.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Well, it's also set in a small town right across the South Carolina-Georgia border. So I kind of dig it because you have people that are really, really good actors, and they actually sound Southern. You know, it's not Jude Law in a Civil War movie or Charlie.
Is it a real town name, like how in House of Cards? Okay, so it's made up. All right.
No, it's made up. But you couldn't do a real town because then you have people driving over there wanting to fight the guy that they think is a rapist. I mean, it's Georgia. I'm not gonna lie. You know, it's like stereotypes are here for a reason.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting because that's the inverse of most stories that are done nowadays. The idea that someone's innocent and falsely accused, especially of rape. Like, that's actually almost really brave and heroic that somebody made a show with that subject matter.
Well, it's so many people have forgotten how to do drama.
Yeah.
And they've forgotten how to do movies. And these people didn't. So it's like a pressure cooker. And every episode is more of a pressure cooker. And you're just uneasy watching it because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's the Independent Film Channel, you just kind of have to keep your – you don't know what's going to happen. There's no rules. If you're watching NCIS, you know they're going to get the bad guy at the end of the episode and they're going to solve the crime. And pretty much most of the time, 99% of the episodes, the main character is not going to die. When you're watching some of these, you know, Netflix and AMC shows, you have no idea what's going to happen next. There are no rules. And it's kind of fun to watch something that you don't know how it's going to end.
Definitely.
Which brings me to HBO's Westworld.
All right, no spoilers for this one.
Just going to touch on it barely. But look, there was a long time ago, HBO was the greatest network ever.
Yep.
And they kind of lost that crown for a couple years to AMC.
Yes.
And I could argue that they may have lost that crown to Netflix, but it doesn't matter if you're number one or number two. They're putting out such good stuff, and the back catalog that HBO has is incredible. So here's Westworld. Oh, and who's in Westworld? About four Academy Award nominee and a couple Academy Award winners. There's so much talent on the screen. The script is unlike anything you ever seen. And when I heard about Westworld, I thought, Westworld show? What? That's not, no. I'm not going to waste my time with that. And the reviews started coming in. People said, you need to check this out. And it's worth the price of the ticket. One thing I like about it is it's different. And, you know, I love science fiction. I love horror when it's not shock horror. So up till about halfway through the year, my number one series of the year was the final series, season number three of Penny Dreadful. Penny Dreadful is a horror show.
Right, starring Eva Green, correct?
The enchanting Eva Green. I mean, she's fantastic. Timothy Dalton is just fantastic. Every episode is an existential mess. But it's horror. You know, you just kind of have to realize it's horror. And that's maybe one of the reasons why it only lasted three seasons. It is unapologetically horror. I'm talking main characters murdered. I'm talking graphic horror. I'm talking blood orgies. you know, but an incredible story and incredible performances by some incredible actors.
So it sounds like if you're a fan of horror, you have to watch Penny Dreadful.
You know, they kept it fresh, and it starts slow in season one, but the payoff at the end of season one is fantastic. Season two is even better when they kind of go mano on mano with a coven of witches. They come back to the vampires in this season, but there's just so many great performances and great actors. And, you know, I think it was Bill Gates that prophesized in the 90s that films and television would switch places and all the talent would go to television. And because at that time, television was just garbage. It was throwaway entertainment. It was the lowest form. You'd have the soap opera actors, and there were a few exceptions, but that was just the way it is. And all the talent was in the movie screen. And that is completely flipped. You go to a movie, you're gonna have to pack a lunch, try to find a movie with four or five really good actors in it. They're out there, but the mass majority of them is not. But the TV shows I've mentioned, they're incredible. The actors are incredible. I mean, there are four Academy Award actors in one of these shows, and I'm about to go over The Night Manager. Hugh Laurie is incredible in The Night Manager.
Yeah, he's kind of had a resurgence over the past year, right? He disappeared a little bit after House, but he had The Night Manager, which was him and Tom Hiddleston, and then he's also on the show Chance. So this is kind of like his almost re-emergence party, the show.
Well, he kind of took, I think he took a little time off from House. I think at the end he was a little bit tired of that character, and he thought that that character wasn't a very good human being. So then he plays a worse human being on The Night Manager, and he just chews up the scenery. He was better than any Bond villain we've had in 10 years in that film. And Hiddleston was probably a better Bond than we've had in 20 years in that film. But it was filmed like a classic miniseries. You get this chunk, and then you get another chunk, and then you get another chunk. It's not a series. It's not 20 episodes. It's not 13 episodes. It's just there's enough time for you to get to know the characters, for the story to be told. No one's rushing through. There's not any mindless action. Plus, unlike a lot of the Marvel Netflix stuff, there's no filler. I mean, you don't see them talking for 15 minutes and you think the only reason the scene is here is because you don't have a budget for another action scene.
So this was an AMC limited miniseries?
It was another AMC limited miniseries. I couldn't recommend it higher.
And they won't be coming back. It's done. It's over. If you watch it, you get a complete story.
It's based on a book. And it has an ending, it has a beginning, and it has an ending, and then it's done. And it is so worth your time. And it's a British, it's a British production. So it's got a little bit of that kind of flair. So you Anglophiles out there will extremely like it.
Yeah, but they'll be mad there's no Benedict Cumberbatch. They'll be like, how do you do a British show without Benedict Cumberbatch?
Tom Hiddleston.
I know.
I give Tom the edge over Cumberbatch.
Just fighting words.
Just by a little bit, man. Cumberbatch just destroyed Doctor Strange. I thought he was and I hated when they cast him because I was like, no, don't let's cast an American as Doctor Strange. He was the perfect Doctor Strange, especially in the beginning when he was a raving narcissist.
Another discussion for another day.
That's another show.
Let's round out your list here. What do we got?
Daredevil comes in at number four.
Really? And
Daredevil was just fantastic. Again, there's no fat. It's all trimmed up. I think the third episode, you've got him chained to the chimney, which is a classic Daredevil cartoon, ripped straight from the comic pages. And the Punisher gives him a gun, and the Punisher says, I'm going to shoot this guy in the head, or you're going to shoot me. So, you know, that's when he tells him, you're one bad day away from becoming me. That was by far the best portrayal of the Punisher. And he wasn't even the Punisher yet. There was a great scene in the first year of Daredevil where he fights about 10 guys in an alley. And it's a really good fight scene. There's a better fight scene in this season where he has to fight about 20 bikers. But then there's the scene where the Punisher is in jail and he's not fighting these guys because they're coming to kill him. So there's about 10 guys, convicts, and it's kill or be killed for Frank. And Frank goes through them like a hot knife through butter. And Vincent D'Onofrio is in it again as the Kingpin. And he's just, I mean, every scene he's in is just fantastic. You know, it's worth watching the show alone to watch when Matt Murdock comes in there and has a conversation with the inmate Kingpin. And he's trying to intimidate the Kingpin and he can't. And he finally brings up the Kingpin's fiance. And the Kingpin just reaches over there and slams his head into the desk and they start fighting across the desk. And Matt tries to fight back, but the Kingpin just dominates him because you don't mess with the Kingpin's fiance.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the episodes. And I loved his ex-girlfriend, Ninja Elektra. And I loved all the ninjas. And I loved Scott Glenn. Jesus
Christ. Yeah, Scott Glenn's awesome.
What a national treasure he is. It's not Shakespeare. It's a comic book on Netflix. And it's so much better than the other Netflix shows that Marvel has done because it's funner. I mean, Jessica Jones is a great show, huge themes, dark themes, but Daredevil's so much fun. So it was number five. I wanted to do a big thing about there's a new number one. I did a top 10 in 2014. Game of Thrones was number one. I did another one in 15. Game of Thrones was the number one TV show, in my opinion, back then. We got a new champion this year because Game of Thrones is number three.
All right.
So
Game of Thrones is number three.
Game of Thrones is number three.
Who's two and who's one? Let's lay it on us here.
Into the Badlands from AMC is my number two.
Interesting.
Series. It is a genre-busting, chop-socky, post-apocalyptic Southern Louisiana fried. There's no way to describe this. Guns have been outlawed, so you have to learn how to fight kung fu, and you use swords. And there's action, there is drama, there is a smidgen of romance, but not too much. Thank goodness. And it's just fantastic. I couldn't recommend that enough. People that love genre stuff, it was criminally underwatched, and it's unequivocally Stranger Things.
That's the number one show of the year, Stranger Things.
I think the number one show of the year.
All right.
And now Stranger Things reminds you at the end that it is a horror show. So if you really, really don't like horror, you're not going to like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But as a person who grew up listening to that music, riding my bike down the street with street lights that were going on and off, playing Dungeons and Dragons in a basement, that show hits so close to home for me. And the reintroduction of Winona Ryder, she just completely nails the 1980s mom. I hate watching children. I probably hate children, period, unless they're my nephews. But these kids are some of the best child actors you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You fall in love with these kids. But unlike the 80s films where they circle around the children, they tell this story so smart. The adults have an arc. The teenagers have an arc. And the children have an arc. And all the stories intertwine the last couple of episodes. And I can't recommend it enough. And that's the number one in my top 10.
Yeah.
2016.
Your point about all the arcs intertwining is really well taken. Because when I was watching it, the first thing I thought was, does this Nancy and Steve stuff have a payoff? Because otherwise, I don't really give a shit. But it paid off nicely in the final scene in the house with Steve, Nancy, and the older brother character.
I couldn't believe that they did. Spoiler alert. I couldn't believe that they gave Steve a redemption story.
Yeah. It was very well done.
And they sold it to us, you know, because at the end of the day, you're like, yeah, well, maybe she shouldn't end up with that goofy photographer, you know. And then they reminded you at the very end, you know, well, the alien thing, it's still here.
Yeah, and that's where I'm interested is what kind of staying power is this show going to have? Because right now, for me, it doesn't have the staying power. I want to see what they do with this upside down and these aliens.
Well, would you like me to spoil it for you?
I don't want to know. Don't tell me season two.
Well, just what the directors have told Entertainment Weekly.
Well, it's a slow. They're saying it's a slow burn, basically, right?
Well, they said they're looking at season two the same way they're looking at all the greatest sequels of all time. If you're a slow burn horror in season one, you have to change the genre for season two.
Interesting.
And they invoked the king of the world,
Empire Strikes Back,
James Cameron.
Oh.
They said season two will be more like how season one was Alien and season two is Aliens.
Interesting. Now,
I don't know how you can make aliens with 12-year-olds riding around on their bike.
Yeah, no kidding.
But game over if they – I mean, these guys nailed it. There's so much little stuff, so much attention to detail in that show that it's so fun to rewatch it. Now, I don't know if it's fun for people that hate the 80s. I don't know if it's fun for people that didn't grow up in that era. I don't know if it's not fun for people that don't like horror. But I like all those things, and I loved it.
Yeah, it makes sense why it would be your number one show. I'm not as much of a fan of those things as you are, but still, as you've noted, the production value for Stranger Things is off the charts, and it definitely deserves recognition for that.
And they took something that was old, and they made it fresh.
Yes.
And that's what I'm looking for, you know. Into the Badlands is so damn different. Night Manager is so different. Penny Dreadful was so different. Westworld, again, they took something that was old and took it in a completely different direction. You know, we've seen 1,000 drug lord type movies, but Narcos takes it in a different direction and gives you something to think about. So my favorite shows.
That sounds like a great way to sum up everything you've just told us over the last hour or so. Is what you're really looking at is you're looking at things that are new. They're different. You're sick of the old. You're sick of the rehashes. I mean, that's what you led with at the top with all the rehashes of Lethal Weapon and Rush Hour and MacGyver. And you're looking at the networks that are giving their creators more freedom. IFC and AMC and HBO and Netflix. These are all the non-mainstream channels and networks that are giving us new. And that sounds to me like that's what RJD's list is prefaced on.
It is. It really is. And even though I don't have any, you know, honorable mention, also goes to the CW. They're doing a hell of a job.
Yeah, there's definitely weaknesses in the Arrowverse, which I now think is basically the Flashverse, but that might be personal preference. But it's succeeding in a way that Marvel is not with their superhero stuff. I would much rather, if somebody was like, if you had to kill the MCU or kill the Flashverse, I would kill the MCU without hesitation.
Well, what would you be losing? You're going to lose Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Come on.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The movies. The only thing I would be losing if I lose the movies is Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. Oh. But I would take the Flashverse over that any day.
Ah, man. I can't kill the Marvel Cinematic Universe because I want to see Bucky Barnes, Captain America.
Don't care.
Just awesome, man. That's just a hope to see it. Hope to see it, but I agree. Robert Downey Jr., just keep paying him whatever. Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. is the Tom Brady of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Without a doubt.
Justin, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Hey, it was a pleasure, man. It was great to hear what you thought. You brought a fresh perspective, I thought, and I think you highlighted something important. You know, on Welcome to the Midside, Daniel is always talking about the new, and I think you really are evidence of that that's what people are looking for. So I really enjoyed hearing what you had to say, and you know, I'm going to watch Westworld now.
I think you should. I think you'll enjoy it. And a lot of my stuff is either fantasy or horror because I'm really into that. But give it a shot if you're into it.
I'm a sci-fi guy, so I'm going to check it out now thanks to you.
Badlands, Into the Badlands has a little dash of science fiction in it. There's a little bit of – it's more fantasy. There's so many of these defy genre.
Yep.
You know, they defy genre, and that's another reason you keep tuning in because you don't know what's going to happen next. You know, I sit down and watch some of these shows, and I know by the first 15 minutes who the killer is, how it's going to get resolved. So to keep me entertained for 13 episodes, you really got to do something different. And I feel like all these things and so many more that we didn't have time to get to are doing it. It's truly, we're on about year 5 of the golden age of television, part 2.
Yeah, man, a lot to look forward to. A lot of great stuff has happened and a lot to look forward to.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
It's your show.
Well, thanks for having the show on Welcome to the Midside. And remember, no great mind without a touch of madness.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Embleznesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Stay back. Be back. Just dance all back. Find the back.